so far on this channel, we've discussed two different answers to the problems that were faced by the countryside between the wars. We've seen an urban progressive socialist environmentalism based on planning and efficiency as pushed for by George Stapledon and Christopher Addison and eventually the British Labour Party. We've seen Lymington and Balfour's aristocratic fascism that wanted to return to feudalism and eradicate farmers and scientists. And today we discuss a third proposal put forward by scientist Daniel Hall and agricultural economist C.S. Orwin. They wanted to nationalise the land, which is one of the reasons the aristocrats in the organic movement really hated scientists.
I'm with the science team!
Last week we looked at C.S. Orwin's analysis of why British farms don't function very well in a market economy. Some of these things are just economic facts, but some of them could be fixed. His friend, prominent scientist Daniel Hall, put forward some proposals in this book, subtitled An Approach to Farming in the National Interest, which is important because he's not arguing for what farmers want, but what he thinks the country needs. It has been contended that British farmers, taken collectively, constitute a fairly representative sample of our people, and are neither incompetent nor out of touch with the modern developments of science and engineering. The state of the countryside points to something definitely wrong, not so much with farmers as with the system they are being called upon to work. So they think the system in the British countryside is broken. Hall compares the efficiency of British production to other countries and draws some conclusions. British farming cannot make use of new technology to increase and cheapen production because of the smallness of farming units and the haphazard parcelling of our land, which had been laid out into farms without consideration of economic working under modern conditions. Subsidies and protection tend to keep in being old methods and indifferent farming. They give excessive profits to good farmers in order to enable bad farmers to live. So Hall dislikes subsidies and government protection. Economically speaking, they preserve the unfit, and over time, any profit made in farming is absorbed by landlords in the form of rent. One cannot escape from the conclusion that the landowner will take the margin between what the land can earn and what the farmer will work for. He argues that if the government spends money on farming, that money is wasted. Subsidies and grants provide capital improvements to the land, but landlords should do that. If a landlord makes investments on his own land, he can get his money back through rent, whereas the state has no way of doing that. Hall wanted farming to be profitable enough to stand on its own two feet and save the government money, but the system just wasn't working. The whole countryside needed to be reorganised, and to do that, the land had to be nationalised. If, then, the state is aiming at farming efficiently, it must, directly or indirectly, exercise control of the use of the land. And since that control can only be brought into play by an owner, the first requisite of a constructive policy is the acquisition of agricultural land by the state. This sounds a lot like communism. The Soviets had big collective farms with centralised depots to make good use of science and machines, but that isn't the intention at all. If the state must own the land, it does not follow that it must farm it. But only as owner can the state secure its redistribution into units of a size more suited to the use of machinery. The land must be planned for economy of production. Hall wants the state to reorganise the British countryside into economic units large enough to make use of economies of scale and stand on their own two feet. He wants to design a countryside that can be capitalist successfully. I would not attempt to remove the motive of private profit, but would seek only to replace the old landlord by a better informed and more enduring landlord who obtains his powers from the state. It is not tenancy that is breaking down, but indifferent landlordism. Hall wants a rebirth of the partner in husbandry idea for the scientific age, which, in my cynical view, I find quite peculiar. I think the partner in husbandry idea was always nonsense. It was an excuse for the aristocracy, a pre-modern social class, to continue existing into the modern age. As soon as it's put under any strain at all after the repeal of the Corn Laws, it falls apart completely. But Hall really likes the idea. Instead of aristocrats and farmers, he wants the government and companies. So now you see why our friend Lymington hated scientists. Between the wars, the aristocrats and scientists were trying to culturally eradicate each other. And note that they were also both trying to culturally eradicate farmers. Lymington wanted to replace them with peasants, and Hall wanted to replace them with companies. And of course, there were no farmers present in this debate. As landlords, the state could rearrange landholdings and infrastructure to suit 20th century technology. And if farms were lumped together, they can have access to professional managers and potentially finance through shareholders and all of the other things normal companies have. And unlike farmers, managers of companies get paid more than their employees. It may be said that merging 20 200-acre farms into a 4,000-acre estate means exchanging 20 farmers for one head and three assistant managers. managers, but the latter would be adequately paid, whereas the 20 farmers would be little better off than their men and would regard themselves as losing money. The only real objectives in these proposed reforms were economy of scale and efficiency. The planning would take little account of previous farm or estate boundaries. Indeed, in many cases, the boundary between estates is arbitrary and accidental, cutting across the economy of large-scale working. Watercourses must be straightened, hedges removed, shores and copses cleared. In the year of our Lord 2024, this statement reads like a mortal sin, but it's not without precedent. This is in line with earlier writers on scientific farming, like MacDonald, who foresaw the depression after the repeal of the Corn Laws and said we should get rid of all our hedges because they just harbour pests and rabbits and they don't have them in Europe, and we need to mechanise with steam power if we can hope to compete on a world market. Arthur Young also thought hedges were a blight on agriculture at the time they were being planted with enclosure, and these people didn't think their views offended nature or beauty. One need not fear that England will be deprived of trees. There is no lack of steep slopes and bad land that is better planted. What angers one is the multiplicity of patches of neglected, overcrowded trees intruded onto good farming land. Even from the point of the picturesque, they destroy the noble contours of the ground. A sense of stewardship was central to Hall's ideology. He wanted the land to be preserved in a fertile state for future generations, but he felt the existing system was failing to do that. He wants the government as landlord to be an authority that shall be jealous of the land, intolerant of its waste and defilement. All the world over, there seems to be little public conscience of the duty that man owes the land, that he shall hand it on, at least unimpaired, to his successors. Everywhere, unthinking deterioration is going on, and though in this country such massive destruction as the Dust Bowl of North America cannot occur, we accept equally flagrant destruction whenever someone thinks that thereby he can make money out of doing what he likes with his own. And that is why you need a knowledgeable, engaged landlord to guide the forces of capitalism towards good farming rather than ecological destruction. Daniel Hall worked as a civil servant in the agriculture ministry during the First World War, so he draws all these ideas up in quite a lot of detail in case they be translated into policy, which, spoiler, doesn't happen. Orwin does some maths to work out the value of all British land, £770 million, or over £30 billion in today's money, and that money is to be raised by the government through a new type of stock, which would be given to landowners on a long-term basis and give them a little bit of interest comparable to the rent that they had taken on the land. Then surveys would be undertaken to understand soil types, which had been going on to some extent since stamp survey. With this information, large farms can be created by engineers and economists, and the first few will be kept in hand by the government to train not farmers but managers and sub-managers to take on other large farms as they are created. Thus, one of the needs of agriculture would be met, i.e. the recruitment for the management side of the industry of young men of capacity who would otherwise have little or no capital on which to make a start. Like any other industry, Hall wants agriculture to be designed in such a way that you could get a job by being interested in it, getting trained, and applying for a position. To achieve this, Hall proposes a new government department, which he calls the Agricultural Development Corporation. He thinks this will undertake purely technical work, so it should be insulated from politics and farmers' rights organisations like the NFU. He points to organisations like the Forestry Commission, or I suppose the Bank of England today, which has government endowment and executive powers, but is independent. And as such, parliamentary scrutiny of the corporation would be through the Treasury, who fund it, rather than the Agriculture Ministry. The board of the corporation must have a businessman, an engineer, and somebody familiar with land. A scientist must be present, but most of its members were just intended to be part-time business people who would choose the right advice rather than give it, as happens in business. The corporation would recondition lands on behalf of the state independently. It would locate lands for improvement, undertake surveys, dispossess its inhabitants, but perhaps recruiting a few of them if they're particularly talented. The corporation would also talk to agricultural colleges to recruit a new managerial class. Hall wants the route to a career in agriculture to be education and selection based on merit. And then the corporation would give these lands back to the Crown Estate to let them to tenants. And that's it. It's not a very complicated idea. They wanted the government to be an enlightened landlord, a partner in husbandry, and to redesign the land in such a way that it worked in the 20th century. Bigger farms that could make use of technology and economies of scale would hopefully pull British agriculture out of its depression. So that's the plan, but Hall finishes with a few cultural points. He objects to the urban back-to-the-land movement as something preventing farming becoming a modern industry. Now the crude uniformity of the cities is turning people's eyes back to the country as a place of escape, but farming farming must not be held down to a past, merely because that would be in conformity with the aesthetic outlook of the townsfolk. And he has a go at the organicists. At the present time, it is good form to abuse science. From a recent book that had been written in support of a return to the old ways of farming without mechanisation or artificial fertilisers, I find sentences as, from specialists, experts, authorities, cranks, quacks, and all clever, clever people, good Lord deliver us. The truth is that the British governing class, whether in public affairs or private business, have not yet learnt how to use the expert. And then he says the landlord class don't need to worry because their estates are being eroded by death duties anyway, and if they were interested in land, they could become one of the government's tenants. Men who are vitally interested in their estates can become tenants under the Crown, can farm the whole and retain all the amenities and sporting rights they formerly enjoyed. Orwin also makes a slightly tongue-in-cheek comment when he says that landlords in the sense established by the agricultural revolution are supposed to be progressive and embrace science. He says the Rockinghamites of that era would undoubtedly support the redesigning of the land to suit the 20th century, as they had done in the 18th century when they redesigned it with enclosure. Hall makes this point in bold font, which he doesn't do anywhere else in his book. The scheme here proposed is but an orderly progression along the line British farming has been following throughout all its history. And that is what the agricultural scientists wanted to do between the wars to save British farming. If people are interested, I might do a little overview video comparing all of these different ideologies, but otherwise we're on to the Second World War, which is one of the most important things that has ever happened, and we'll see how all these different ideologies play out against each other as our population is threatened with starvation. Stick around for it.